Welcome back, everybody. If everyone wants to take their seats, we'll get on with the second panel. The money side of the issue. This is actually called the money panel, we called it? We're very happy to welcome a very strong panel to discuss now the more financial aspects, trends, impact on values that the digital revolution is going to wreak across the asset classes. And I will ask Agnieszka Stankiewicz to take you through the panelists and introduce you, and then we will get going on this panel. Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I will welcome everybody back and the new participants. I would like to ask gentlemen on the panel to introduce themselves and give us a quick explanation. What is your responsibility in your organization? So maybe we'll start with Michael.
Yeah, my name is Michael Kruger. I'm at Helleba in Frankfurt, a bank focusing on, say, a lot of sectors, but one of the core activities is commercial real estate finance, and I'm responsible for the international origination, which means Europe and the U.S.
I'm Thierry Leleux. I'm head of funds management at Valad Europe, which is a diversified investment manager across Europe, active in Central Europe, notably in retail and logistics.
Good afternoon. My name is James Brown. I am head of retail research and consulting at Jones Lang LaSalle, working with investment and agency colleagues, retailers and investors.
My name is Eduard Zietner. I'm CEO of IMO Finance, the largest listed real estate investor in Eastern Europe.
Good afternoon. I'm Michael Rodder. I'm head of retail investment for Cushman & Wakefield across EMEA.
Good afternoon. Joseph Gazal. I'm the chief investment officer for Prologis in Europe. Prologis is the world's largest developer, investor, and owner of real estate, industrial real estate.
All right. So let's see what is the future of both retail, office, and industrial. We have discussed on the previous panel that both retail and office will need to change and will need to listen to customers. And so maybe, I think, James, we have pre-discussed it. Could you tell us what you think, what should change in the retail, how the future shopping centres will look like?
Well, firstly, I'd like to say I'm a firm believer in the physical space, and I think the physical space will continue to exist. I'll just share with you a quick story. On Saturday this week, just gone, my wife asked me if I'd go and get some milk, and I took my two daughters, who are 10 and 12, shopping for the milk. And we came back 2 hours later. We'd had coffee, hot chocolate, croissants. I bought new sneakers for the children and some headphones. And when we got back, my wife said to me, "Where's the milk?" And I'd forgotten the milk. But the point of the story was I spent 2.5 hours with my children shopping, socialising and enjoying myself in a physical environment, and I couldn't have competed with that online. So I think there is really very much a future for the physical space, and I think it will thrive. I think the biggest challenge is trying to identify those locations that will thrive and those that will fall by the wayside. But I think the point is well made that in order for retail places to thrive, they need to adapt. They need to change. They need to be alert to change. So I think we need to be pragmatic, accept that change is inevitable, and then secondly, to be able to adapt and to identify what we need to do in order to change.
We heard here on the previous panel that what happens is the e-commerce are taking the sales from the offline shops, and that offline shops are at risk of becoming showrooms. What do you think, Thierry?
I think I would differentiate between the pure plays such as Amazon and others, and eBay, for instance, and the other brand retailers, let's call them. Those have indeed e-sales that are developing more rapidly than their on-store sales. At the same time, I think the main issue is then how do you as a landlord capture part of those e-sales, which are actually higher margin typically than the one on a shop because obviously they have less fixed costs. So how do you actually go to a compromise with the brands where you apportion justly and the margin will... When you think about affordability ratio 10 years ago was very easy to calculate. Today, talk about affordability ratio for a brand like Peek & Cloppenburg or like other brands. I mean, you know, I'm bad. I hate shopping personally, but if you think about that, it's very difficult to understand. So yes, I know one thing, like it was said, you know, that the only thing that won't change in 10 years is my tenants will always say that the rent is too expensive. And I will always tell my bankers that your margin is too expensive. That's for sure. But they said, so how do you adjust that?
I think an interesting, picking up on that point about sustainability and how do you apportion the return that you get from online and offline. I spoke to a retailer this week who is renewing a lease on a loss-making store because his view is without that physical presence in the physical catchment, he will not be able to serve his virtual catchment. So he needs the online and offline to work in tandem in order to deliver the return that he wants out of geographical regions. So for me, that's a great sign of how the two work hand in hand in a perfect, seamless omnichannel world. And I agree, it's very difficult to understand what that physical space is delivering to that business.
And I would say that when you're Simon or when you're Unibail, you have much more leverage with the retailers than when you're you know, a smaller, obviously, owner, operator of shopping centres. At the same time, what you're saying, which is really the showrooming, will remain important. At the end of the day, to your point, I mean, what you like is also going there and being able to spend some time. So the experimentalization of shopping centres will be absolutely critical.
But the question really is that if there is a showrooming, it means that no sales are made in the shopping centres, and it means that most likely the retailers will downsize. So how you cope with this? You know, Edward, would you care to comment this?
I think we have to see the changes in front of us much more than just either offline or online shopping. There are so many electronic and new services, and if you look to what Google is providing in terms of services, location-based services, many things, many apps, every A-class shopping center has to have a free Wi-Fi in order to provide electronic services for the customers. And shopping centers have to develop into places to be, places where people won't spend their time, where they are entertained or they are entertaining themselves. And that's not just buying online, offline. We have to create with shopping centers a new environment where we integrate online, offline features and combine the advantages of both worlds. And that's the challenge going forward, how to integrate all these new tools and services. And still, and I'm a believer, like Gerhard Dunstheimer in the last panel, I'm a believer in personal interaction of people, in communication of people. You cannot, if you have to negotiate something, you have to do something, you have to interact personally. You cannot do it via video conferences, things like that. You lose momentum, you lose impression. And so the same is with shopping centers. You have to feel it physically.
If I may venture something, I completely subscribe to what you're saying, that basically shopping centers that will provide a leisure experience, you know, that will provide also a food experience, and we've seen that with the previous panel who was saying that now the food component was up to 10% in shopping centers, will probably survive and do well. Now, all the shopping centers cannot be dominant jumbo shopping centers because simply you can't afford that. Then you have almost a trifurcation, which is you have the convenient shopping center that will probably remain, you know, not at all fashion oriented, but they will be typically food anchored with some services, etc. And those, because they're convenient, you go down the street and you're at your supermarket, whatever, will probably survive as well. The one that worry me most, personally, are actually the one which are in the middle. They are in a location which is, yes, not bad, but they're under competition from a dominant shopping center, and they're not close enough to be convenience.
I fully agree. What we lose and what we see in every aspect of our life is we lose the middle. So as a top, the low side, cheap or expensive and entertaining.
So how does it affect the existing portfolios? Because it means that some of it will fall from the map. And how does it affect, you know, will all the shopping centers, will all shopping centers will not change? So what's going to happen? How the investors will cope with it? Michael, any?
I mean, I personally think that there's potential for portfolios to develop alongside the growth of the internet, whereby a centre which has become less interesting in terms of customer flow could actually become a centre for click and collect, for example. So it may well be that although you have offline versus online, which we're all discussing here, ultimately it may just be a combination of the two coming together, and actually the online sales driving footfall into centres which we all consider to be dying centres today, which may well end up as destinations for industrial, you know, and warehousing and collection and storage. So, you know, it may not all be negative for these centres.
I more kind of agree to this philosophy that it's not a question about offline versus online. It's just providing another option to the consumers that, and this option is basically leading to incremental demand and incremental incremental options to the, you know, growing population. I mean, nothing will happen to the retailer that they would have just to adapt and change a little bit their offering in order to survive and continue. That's what I think.
And also this sort of digital revolution in retail, at least, or has been happening since quite a time already. There are some brands who make like 20, 30, or even 40% via online sales. And there's an interacting between online sales and physical sales. And it goes in a different manner for each product, for each brand, for each category, actually. And every, say, retailer or brand has to decide how can he react to that, how can he blend this into his business model, the growing momentum of online sales. But it's not a online versus offline sales, but it's a sort of a intercommunication. Everything is depending on each other. And what we see, and maybe coming back to the topic of our panel, is that this has not sort of had a detrimental effect on shopping centers. The opposite, actually. The institutional investors are looking for that. Unibail-Rodamco just recently completed the full purchase of the Galeria Mokotów. And so there is a huge demand, actually, because a certain number of the economic growth in CE is still going in consumption, and so it's a growing sector. Also, the offline physical retail. But
Michael, you're talking about Unibail-Rodamco, which typically has been preaching for the past few years, jumbo destination shopping centers. Okay, I think we're all convinced this will work, but they've been arbitraging everything which was not jumbo destination shopping centers. So, I mean, as a lender, would you finance, you know, shopping centers in secondary location, which are actually being challenged by dominant shop by a Galeria Mokotów?
Well, that is actually this is a situation that you would hardly find, because the giant dominant centers are in the big city hubs, and on a say regional platform, you just have less competition. And we have done this. We have done financed a shop inner city shopping center in Olsztyn, which is something we really had to explain to our credit committee where that is and how many inhabitants that city has. But every case, I mean, you can demonstrate it's an investment case. It's a situation where you don't have the same thing just down the road. And that's, I mean, this applies also, by the way, to the jumbo centers. So if you say, look at Mokotów, you have to clearly differentiate where is the competitive set, let's say. And there is one in Warsaw, as you know. And so every category is different. And the good thing about, say retail and CE, as far as our, say, lending policy is concerned, that you have a vast landscape that is growing. I mean, the regional cities have come on the map, institutional money going to that. Remember when this Asian fund bought in was it Brno, the large center, and so investment money from all over the world is looking into this region and especially into retail.
And in the regional centers, you get your money earlier back than in the large ones because the yields are higher, isn't it?
Yeah.
The risk is lower.
Yeah, we have been working together on the Silesia City Center, I remember, and this has been just a tremendous success, I remember that.
I think the outlook also differs by market. I think, you know, the where there's growth and markets aren't saturated, there's still less risk, I think. Yeah. Picking up on your point, in some of the more developed markets where there is saturation, I think, you know, there is need for convenience at one end, there is need for the leisure at the other end, and in some instances there's sort of convenience plus that's kind of neither one nor the other. And I personally think in some of the more developed markets it's inevitable that we're going to see some obsolescence coming through in the next 5 to 10 years, and it'll be up to those centres to either reposition, to change, or inevitably just to accept the consequences of, you know, the new world of retail.
I was just going to say, I think the most important question from an investment point of view about the online, offline debate is really how you identify value within the stores. And there's several different ideas going around at the moment about measuring footfall rather than revenue at the stores and working out some sort of formula that will influence the rental value of the store relevant to the footfall outside the store. It's definitely not the be-all and end-all answer, but it is a solution in the right direction. And I think this is going to be particularly relevant with the super-regional schemes, where there is an element of showroom about the stores. And there's also an element of marketing, brand awareness, and everything else about retail that connected to that. But how you actually capture that value as an investor, I think it's not something that's been really thought about yet, but it definitely will be something that we'll have to work out as an industry over the next medium term.
Talking about revenues, if your shopping centres will at least partly move out to being showrooms so that the purchase is made online after the touchy-feely part in the showroom, how does affect the rent, which we all know that part of it is a turnover rent? How investors will cope with it? Any thoughts on it?
Yes, well, I mean, that's what I was saying. That the footfall could be an indication in the future to impact rental value. So, you know, whereas today we all know that within shopping centres you measure footfall into the actual shopping centre, it may well be that one option of doing it would be to measure footfall outside that particular store or footfall into the store rather than actual sales at that store per se.
Okay. Maybe moving a bit to the industrial, because we had a representative of Amazon on the previous panel, and what he said is that the industrial is changed right now. It's not on the crossroad of major road. It's close to the communities, and the requirements are different. Joseph, any thoughts how this affect the investment in industrial? Because the land which you buy would be most likely more expensive, and then whatever the tenant requires inside of the box, it's not a retail box any longer.
Yeah, it was never a retail box, but you know,
it was
if you look at industrial box.
Yeah,
if you look at what, you know, how we developed the last 10 years, also our own specification or our standards have evolved over time, and today all of our, you know, new standard kind of warehouses have equipment that could bring in an e-commerce company to operate in the warehouse. They would have just to add that equipment, and each company has different equipment. Amazon would have, you know, mezzanines, conveyors. Others would have different things. So the box has evolved over time, and it still is going to evolve the next decade. What's not evolving is the landscape that's out there. The cities, the big consumer centers are what they are. And with the competition that, not the competition, but the objectives of the e-commerce for same-day deliveries, they are getting closer to the cities. And having maybe a big e-fulfillment center that is maybe 40, 50 kilometers outside the cities and then some of the satellite warehouses that are closer to the cities, not just to serve the customer, but also for the reverse logistics, for the returns that they will use those satellite warehouses closer to the cities for that. On investment, I mean, we have a strategy that is to be close to our customers and to the consumers, and that's to be close to the cities. We usually don't, you know, or customers don't like to go in the middle of nowhere and invest there where there are no consumers. So they tend to be closer to seaports, airports, or big consumer centers, and this is where the strategy will be.
Do you think that there is more demand for the automated warehouses? Because we heard as well that distribution centers are moving towards fulfillment centers. And this is a bit more complex development. How do you see that?
I don't see that trend generally in the market. Each customer will install its own equipment. Our job is to give him the most flexible box that we can in order for him to operate. What's part of the fixed fixtures, like maybe some mezzanines or more office, that's what we're seeing. We're seeing a trend about bigger boxes. I mean, we're doing bigger boxes in the UK today. I mean, there is 1 million square foot for Sainsbury, for example, being erected. Part of it is high bay even, so 25 meters, but they're signing 25 years deal, for example, on this one. So there is a trend about more sophistication inside the warehouse, but it's not part of the fixed fixtures that the landlord would install generally.
Yeah, but it certainly seems that right now it's an industrial market boom coming with the distribution centers and fulfillment centers. Michael, what is the appetite of seeing that the weight is moving a bit to the industrial? What is the appetite for financing the retail?
First of all, this fulfillment center versus distribution center, I think that's a unique feature of this business model like Amazon or Otto, where you actually skip completely the stationary section, let's say. From production, manufacturing, they just facilitate it to the customer. And so that are like very few platforms using that, and they use these kind of fulfillment centers. But logistics and industrial is, like, say, for the vast majority of everything else. So there will be not... I don't see a trend, let's say. It's just a complementary and additional product that we see. We see, on the other hand, a very, say, lively interest of the investment community in logistics. Everybody buys that, wants that, especially in growing economies like in CE. To my understanding, all the producers, let's say, for these facilities are sold out and or are in a good sales position. The prices have gone up a little bit. And and from a lending perspective, we apply the same, say features or scales as we do for every financing. So the tenant mix, it's different. Do you have a 20,000 square meter box to one tenant, maybe commencing with a capital A? Yeah. Or do you have a mixture and you're close to the customer, let's say, to the end customer? So it's a mixture, yeah.
At the risk of being seen non-modest, after the manufacturing of the product, it all starts with the warehousing. Without the warehousing, there wouldn't be any retail, any office, anything. So the product has to transit by a warehouse. And what we're seeing in today's market, especially in Europe, the market is so much underserved that the demand, even during the recession the last 3-4 years, if we had one experience, that the demand has kept being strong. I mean, the last 3 years, we had take-up in Europe in logistics that is as big as the pre-crisis years, 06, 07, 08. The market in Europe is 25 to 30% what it is in the US today, whilst we have a bigger economy and similar population base generally in Europe. So there is a lot of product that is obsolete. We talked about obsolete in the first panel, and that will have to get to Class A and change somehow. So the demand is there, and certainly from an investor perspective, the demand also is there to invest in the product and continue growing.
But I would guess that particularly for the e-commerce and particularly the B2C of it, I mean, obviously the specifications are different, but I agree with Michael's point that it is actually not a competition necessarily to the traditional warehousing. It is completely complementary. It's of a different technology, different layouts. If you think that, for instance, I think that the market leader is South Korea in terms of e-sales, 13 to 14% of total sales are e-sales. In Poland, it's less than 2%. So, I mean, growth will be exponential, clearly. And that's where I think that I understand why you're building, frankly, 5 e-fulfillment centers, because you're going to have your hands full.
Yeah, and just to come back to this a little bit, we know that cross-dock is probably a separate asset class, and it's been recognized as such. I'm not sure that what has been said in the previous panel, that recognizing the e-fulfillment centers as a separate asset class is beneficial to the e-commerce sector. I think, on the contrary, blending with the general logistics market would benefit from a values perspective and from a flexibility perspective, because you know the market is still young. Even Amazon specifications are changing and have changed, and you know they will still improve them around the edges or get to the more refined specifications. So the market is not mature yet, as the logistics sector in general in Europe. I mean, it started 10, 15 years ago. We can't say that we're a 100 years old industry. So we're still kind of searching for the best compromise out there, whether it's in e-fulfillment center specification, logistics specification, to get there. And I think that the e-fulfillment will benefit from being blended in the overall logistics rather than being recognized as separate asset class that I think will, as cross-docks are, usually have lower values than the logistics will have because of that will be viewed as highly specified, therefore not very flexible to the majority of the users, will get hit somehow.
Well, it means that the investors and the banks would be looking rather towards the logistics than retail. Would it change the approach of the investors and banks?
Logistics and retail?
What we're saying is that retail suffers because of the e-commerce, unless it changes, and not everything will change.
Yeah?
Modifies, sorry.
And logistics will have to change because of the retail will change. So, I don't see it as offline versus online.
The physical space at the moment, certainly if you look at the United Kingdom as a barometer of what can happen because of where it is in the maturity curve, we've got about 12 to 15% sales online as a nation, and that's depending on which source you use. But much of the growth that's coming through at the moment is being driven through click and collect. And if it wasn't for the physical space, the physical retail networks, they wouldn't have that option. Now, in the UK again, John Lewis, one of our most advanced, mature department stores, is now generating 25% of sales online. They're generating 22% sales growth year on year and online. And click and collect is seeing growth of 70%. And that's drawing people into the physical space. The other interesting point for me is that each and every person that goes in to pick up a click and collect product, one in four is buying something spontaneously. And that per capita spend is going up exponentially year on year. So the two combined, I think, is very, very, very important.
There's a very positive message, what you're saying. I've read some statistics about the US shopping malls, and it seems that 20% space in those malls are vacant. This is a very matured market. So the question is whether this risk may also transport itself to CE and Europe. Because then actually what happened is that people are doing online sales and the space becomes vacant. And maybe the shopping malls didn't adapt. I don't know.
Should we look at the supply here? Because, 20% vacant in the US, depending where. I guess there are probably some areas in Austin or whatever where it's probably 40, 60%. But, CE remains, by all standards, undersupplied in terms of retail. Very little, particularly in Poland, very little high street retails, etc. And it remains below. Go to Scandinavia, talk about retail. I don't think that you have an oversupply today in Central Europe, frankly. That's my humble view, but...
Yeah, this is, of course, a concern we also raise, frequently. Where is it all going? Construction activity is still strong. But we see also this economic growth, the underlying... Central Europe is a success story, let's say, for the last decades, actually, and this is our opinion, will continue to be so.
James,
I think it's about the right space in the right place, and in some instances there's a lack of supply, and on the other hand there's excess supply. Again, there are places in successful retail places in Europe where vacancy is at zero, and other places where you can see vacancy rates creeping up beyond 50%. And again, it comes down partly to polarisation, for me, and partly also down to some markets being oversupplied. So I think it's market, location by location basis, really.
The UK has seen many zombie centres, how they're called, with basically during the world crisis, really vacancy of 60, 70%, and they just die, simply because they don't have the convenience aspect, they don't have the dominant aspect, they're lost in limbo, and they become zombie centres. I think Poland, thank God for the moment, and other Central European countries, are still at a level where the supply is not too harmful for the people who are not dominant nor convenient. But it will come.
Okay, sorry, Mike.
No, I was just going to say, I think if you look around the whole of EMEA, there's very few real zombie centres. I mean, I've probably seen one or two in my entire career. They normally reinvent themselves either through turnover-only leases or change in retail formats or change in their target market. It's pretty rare to see something that's absolutely dead. So.
Okay. Just touching quickly maybe on office, there's much less material about that, but do you think that digital revolution, like what we discussed on the previous panels, like cloud computing, the fact that you can actually work from office more and more, it will affect the demand for office space and how the investors look at the office assets? Thierry, any thoughts?
And again, I mean, I'm not big on office in Central Europe, so I'll confess that. What we've seen elsewhere where we've done dealings is overall, typically indeed, particularly the new concept, and when we're talking about, you know, the Googles, the technology has been a key driver. Tech companies have been a key driver in take-up. What we see is typically they use less space on a per square meter, per employee than traditional companies. So do we think that even if there are more people coming to work, the space needs won't greatly increase, and that's probably why you've had actually very limited new supply coming in, except probably in cities like Warsaw where it's booming, frankly. But otherwise in Paris, in other cities in Germany, it's been very very slow new supply coming online.
Yeah, actually, that's true. The supply side has been slowing down since the financial crisis broke out, let's say, and never come back since then. And also, just a remark that the digital revolution on that side, I mean, I think that's a cliche. We see that sometimes in TV shows that say, I don't know, campus-style software developments where people are, you don't know, is it a spa vacation or is it an office? I've seen those places, and it's really amazing to see that in San Francisco or New York, but it's just a minor part. And by coincidence, or not by coincidence, one of the key drivers of the office take-up increase in the last years in New York and in San Francisco, for instance, are the tech companies. New York is the new Silicon Valley. The companies are moving there. Whole parts of downtown Manhattan are converting into loft-type office spaces, and it's the tech companies occupying this. And, well, there may be some developers working from home or from somewhere, but overall the trend is clearly stationary. Yahoo, you saw that, ordered in all back on in all their home work people, and the trend there is clear. Although the way they occupy the space might be a little bit different, but there is a clear demand.
Sorry,
yeah, I want to underpin that it is for office is essential that you have growth, economic growth, from wherever it comes. And if there's no economic growth, you don't need offices, you don't need space, you shouldn't invest into. So and whatever the source is, it doesn't matter. Growth is essential.
But do you think that the investors will like now the slowing down of the supply of the office space on the more mature markets? Do you think that right now the investors will look for more green space, which will have more appeal to the tenants? Or is
the issue is you have always to, if you produce new office space or whatever real estate, you have to develop the latest technology. You have to apply all what is expensive in investment, energy plus houses, as we do, and that is essential, because such a building is designed for maybe 30, 40, 50 years. So, you cannot leave out anything which is state of the art.
Okay. I think that we're coming to the close of our time. So before we move to the question part from the audience, I would like to venture for a few minutes far apart from the digital resolution. Many of us hail from Central Eastern Europe, and while we're debating here in Cannes the future and the changes in real estate, the history is happening actually in our doorstep in while Ukraine is fighting for the future of its country. Do you think that what's going on in Ukraine and the how Russia is approaching the issue of Ukraine and Crimea and potentially Eastern Ukraine will affect the appetite of investors and banks to invest not only in Ukraine but also in the region? Michael, you're the money.
that's the next panel, isn't it? No, but you could do a full panel on that. But of course,
yeah, just a quick thought.
At this point in time, it will be mostly speculation. And I spoke with one of the title insurance representatives, and he didn't receive any disturbed calls neither yet, as we did not do. I think at this point, it's way too early. And to be honest, I mean, also personally speaking, I think nobody can really imagine going back to the old days, let's say, and this is why maybe everybody is still looking at this in terms of this cannot be. And so
will not
we'll
happen.
See.
You know, yeah. The annexation will not happen.
Although I think the Crimea will decide upon a Russian citizenship, and they will take it, and we will see all kinds of actions and sanctions enrolling next week, but there will be a diplomatic afterplay, and that's my personal opinion.
Right. Any questions from the audience to the panelists? Well,
yes. Thank you. A few minutes ago, you were talking about the new sort of trendy office space that Generation Y likes to work in. And on the first panel, I mentioned about Silicon Roundabout in London. And I gather that maybe the covenant strength of a lot of all these new high-tech startup companies, at least initially, until they get some venture capital behind them, could be a little bit iffy. So how do you value, you know, as I'm looking at Michael as a bank lender, if you had a building full of all these, shall I say, Mickey Mouse lease contracts, would you give someone the funding for that? And Michael, what yield would you put on it relative to others?
Yeah, well, let's say the leases we saw, or the buildings with leases to, say, startup companies. So what is a startup company? I mean, they could be, and usually as millions of dollars or euros already of venture capital on board before they sign a costly lease in one of the precious buildings we finance or our customers built, let's say. So this is a cliche. We know from movies, from TV shows, and shown to us because we like to see this. It's funny, it's interesting. The reality is that they all work on business plans. They have money managers, business managers, and investment supervisory and everything. They work on real products. It's not just that they come up with an idea like in the Mickey Mouse things and say, hey, mate, let's make the next, I don't know, Edison lamp. It's they have real products and they're working on it. They have income and This is how it works. I mean, this is how they are tenants, and I don't see this kind of situation as you describe it actually on in reality.
Yeah, I'd rather think on price per square foot, and particularly if they're still Mickey Mouse, they're not going to be a big tenant.
Any more questions? Okay.
Right. We will wrap up here. I'd just like to say thanks very much to the team. We're very honoured, as I said, to have a panel of very strong EMEA, Europe, and ANCE experts. Thanks very much to Joseph, to Mike, to Edouard, to Thierry, and to James, and also to Michael. And thanks very much indeed to Agnieszka Stankiewicz from Norton Rose for moderating today.
Certainly, there was an emphasis in this panel on retail and office. That's where a lot of the challenges are, but as I think also came through, I heard James saying, as with any revolution, where there's going to be challenges, there's also going to be new opportunities. And I think that's going to come through. Certainly shopping centres, we're going to see a lot more impulse-driven retail going on in the shopping centres, taking advantage of the showrooming and entertainment centre trend. Look at the way the shopping centres operate in Dubai, if anyone's been to a shopping centre in Dubai. And I think that's probably a paradigm for the future direction. We are, if anyone's going to be at the Seeker Gala, I hope some of you are, we've recorded this today, and we're going to be weaving phrases, sentences, and sound bites on various platforms through the Seeker Gala to keep this theme going. It's an important theme for the future of real estate. But in the short term, we are going to now move across, just across the way, just go diagonally right, where we're going to have the secret MIPIM reception, where we're going to announce the Real Green Award winners for this year, four categories: Real Green Building of the Year, Developer of the Year, Investor of the Year, and Service Provider of the Year. And that's going to be followed by the announcement of the shortlist for the main Seeker Awards, which will be presented in 22 categories in Warsaw on 8th of April at Soho Factory. So thank you very much, everyone, once again, and thank you very much for everyone for coming. We've had a wonderful audience today.
Thank you ever so much.
Cheche.
Merci.
Grand merci à tous.
Come on.
Danke.
Toda.
Shukran.
Domo, arigato gozaimasu.
Muchas gracias.
Dhanyavad.
Спасибо.
Thank you.
Au contraire.
Mulțumesc.
Merci.
Merci.
Rahmat.
Thank you.
Keshekula.
Akewa.
Thank you.
Sahit.
Shukran.
Merci.
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 Grazie.
Спасибо большое.
Dziękuję.
Thank you.
Muchas gracias.
Dankjewel.
Grazie enorme.
Hartelijk bedankt.
Dank.
Merci.
All of us at RIMIDEM thank you for your support for MIPIM over 2.5 decades. Now, let's enjoy the next 25 years.